Blog Talk Radio.
I say I will. I'll take the ride. 'Cause I'd rather have connections, pleasure and pain than be alone here with my pride. Okay, I'll take my shot. This time I'll take my chance. 'Cause that's all I have left. If I don't, if I won't choose love, and pride's all I have left. If I don't choose love.
Well, good evening and welcome. Thank you for tuning in to Voices of the Sacred Feminine, the extended edition. I hope you've enjoyed a bit of that upbeat opening song by Laura Kane called Choose Love. Well, we are officially into the first few weeks of our Foremothers and Wayshowers series, which will go on until the end of February. Yes, we've extended it a bit. We couldn't help it. The series has been inspired by many of you who have been keeping in touch with me over the last 20-plus months of the show. But one email in particular really moved me toward putting the effort into doing this series. It was from a regular fan, Lucy Madeline. Here's just a short snippet from a rather lengthy email she sent me. She says, I began to pray to Goddess to show me my religion, my place of worship, to bring me to the others so that I don't have to be alone with my knowledge of her. I prayed for her to show me my calling, and she told me to go online. Well, I got out my little phone, which I'm writing to you from right now, and I don't remember how, but Karen, I was led to your website. I began to listen to the archives. I listened to show after show for all those days, and I'm still listening today and every week. As I went through the archives, there was Barbara Walker, Rianne Eisler, Carol Christ, women I've often dreamed of talking with since I was a young teenager. And to hear their voices and know they are alive, that they are real, meant so much. Ever since I first began to awaken to this consciousness, I began to cry out, where are my mothers? Where have they gone? Well, they're here every Wednesday night, Lucy, and other listeners out there at 6 o'clock Pacific, and they're generously giving more of their time for you to hear what projects are sparking their passion at this point in their careers. And tonight, our guest needs no introduction. We have Starhawk on the show. Unless you've just arrived on a UFO, you know her body of work. Hey, even if you have just arrived on some otherworldly craft, you probably heard of Starhawk. In the next few weeks, we also have Joan Marler coming up soon. She's well known in her own right, but perhaps best known for continuing the work of Maria Gimbutas. Then we have Barbara Walker, another one who needs no introduction, followed by Genevieve Vaughn, popular for her gift economy ideas and as the founder of the Sekhmet Temple outside Las Vegas. We take a break for a week and Thanksgiving holiday, and then we're back the first week of December with Patricia Monahan. So if you're new to Voices of the Sacred Feminine here on Blog Talk, because as I understand, a lot of new listeners are tuning in because of this series, know that we can take your caller questions. So if you like, dial in and ask questions toward the end of the interview. The call-in number is 718-766-4662. When I see your call on the switchboard, I'll identify you by your area code and welcome you to have a chance to ask our guest a question. Again, that number is 718-766-4662. And if you can't listen live or don't want to be on the air, you can always email me some of your questions in advance, as many of you have done tonight for Starhawk. But keep tuning in each Wednesday night at 6. Don't miss us. In fact, you can join Blog Talk as a listener and have reminders sent to your email box of our shows so you won't forget about our awesome guests each week. And please, if you like what you're hearing, if you're a fan of the show, indicate that by selecting us as a favorite on Blog Talk. Well, now it's time for that opening segment you tell me you like so much called What's the Buzz? When we talk about what's happening out there in the world related to goddess advocates or issues related to women, girls, or ideals of the sacred feminine. And as you might guess, Wiccans, pagans, and goddess advocates made the news as they usually do this time of year, with many of us just having celebrated Samhain or Hallows. And the news continues to be enlightening, positive, and educational. ABC News had a special on about, which was called More Americans or Wiccan and Will Celebrate Samhain, Not Halloween. The article mentioned the growing number of people turning to earth-based spirituality. Selena Fox, the tireless advocate for pentagrams on military gravestones, weighed in and always does a good job. Selena, who was an opening guest for our show a few years ago, was again front and center in another column called On Religion in the New York Times. She and academic Michael York, a longtime pagan, formerly of the Bath Spa University in England, did a good job dispelling wicked propaganda that fuels misconceptions, fear, and divisiveness. And we can't do that enough because it still lives out there. TV preacher Pat Robertson's Christian Broadcasting Network, which posted on its website a bizarre column about Halloween candy being demonic. A number of blogs picked up the story, but now the column has mysteriously vanished from the Christian Broadcasting Network site. And happy Halloween, and thanks to Barry Lynn and Americans United for Separation of Church and State for publicly pointing out that Halloween in America today is secular and is distinct from Samhain, the religious holiday celebrated by Wiccans, Druids, and other pagans. Then Cherry Hill Seminary heard from halfway across the globe. A show called Believe It or Not, South Africa's longest running radio talk show, which has hosted guests like the Dalai Lama, Deepak Chopra, Goldie Hawn, Dr. Andrew Weald, Desmond Tutu. Well, Believe It or Not show began to research the subject for their November 1st call-in show, and they were quite surprised to run across Cherry Hill Seminary online and immediately contacted them for a live appearance. What would normally be a 15-minute call-in segment turned into a full-hour interview with the head of their chaplaincy program, Reverend Patrick McCullum, who has been on this show, and I'd urge you to look for our interview in the archives. Believe it or not, host Kate Turkington wanted to hear whether pagans consider Halloween a secular or sacred holiday. She asked, has paganism become mainstream and what we hope to contribute to society? And in a country which is acknowledging openly that it has a witchcraft problem, that is, a wave of violence against people perceived as witches, McCullum's message was actually hopeful. Turkington, the host, agreed with her guests that pagans were at the forefront of the environmental movement as far back as the 60s, at a time when Abrahamic religious leaders quoted the Bible as giving humans dominion over Earth. McCullum stated that he is proud to have been part of that early movement and happy to see most other religions now in agreement about the need to protect Earth. Discussion on the show also highlighted how pagans have brought the idea of the divine feminine to many religions. I'm happy to say Kate Turkington has asked to interview me on December 6th, and our topic is going to be Sacred Feminine for a Sustainable Future. And finally, kudos go out to Rita Morgan in Salt Lake City, Utah. She went on Fox News and did a good job showing how normal paganism and Wicca really is, and how real witches are probably your neighbor, your nurse, or your nanny. Now, no doubt there were more voices out there perpetuating a positive and realistic explanation of the season and who pagans and Wiccans really are. These were just the ones sent in to me, and I thank those of you who brought the work of these individuals to my attention. And if you're wondering why I consistently have this segment opening each show, well, it's because the programming has been pervasive. We have to constantly educate, whether we're educating about women's issues or Wiccan issues. We have to inoculate ourselves against ignorance, intolerance, and those insidious isms. Okay, the bees are released from my bonnet for another week. And now to our guest, Starhawk. I thank her for her patience, and let me tell you just a little bit about her extensive background. Starhawk is one of the most respected voices in modern earth-based spirituality. She's also well known as a global justice activist and organizer whose work and writings have inspired many into action. She is the author of, or co-author of 11 books, including The Spiral Dance, A Rebirth of the Ancient Religion of the Great Goddess, long considered the essential text for the neo-pagan movement, and the now classic ecotopian novel, The Fifth Sacred Thing. Her newest book is a picture book for children called The Last Wild Witch. Her books have been translated into Spanish, French, German, Danish, Dutch, Italian, Portuguese, Polish, Greek, Japanese, and Burmese. Her essays are reprinted across the world and have been included in numerous anthologies. Her writing is influential and has been quoted by hundreds of other authors, turning up in magazines, trade and academic press, and even inspirational calendars. Her books are often found in college curriculums. I could go on and on. She's perhaps best known as an articulate pioneer in the revival of earth-based spirituality and goddess religion. She's a co-founder of Reclaiming, an activist branch of modern pagan religion, and she continues to work closely with the Reclaiming community. Starhawk, my honored guest, thank you for your patience and welcome to the show.
Hi, I'm glad to be on.
Well, thank you so much. Well, Starhawk, I thought I would start off with some of the questions that have been emailed in, and people out there want to know, what do you think is your biggest accomplishment throughout your decades of work?
I guess I would say, you know, in a way for me, my biggest accomplishment is that so much of this work goes on without my doing it anymore, you know, that other people have taken it on, that Reclaiming, which is the group I work with, creates rituals, does witch camps, that there are so many people teaching, so many people now writing, so much creativity, that I've been able to pass on some of the skills and some of the insights so that other people can really take pieces of the work and make it their own.
So you've created an awesome legacy.
You don't have to be modest.
you don't have to be modest. You have a lot to be proud of. Well, Starhawk, Rhiann Eisler, some of these questions are political. I guess you can probably expect that because of your activism. Rhiann Eisler has said publicly, Goddess is a Democrat, considering a two-party system, you know. If Goddess had a political affiliation, would you agree the concerns of, at least what generally are the concerns of Democrats, you know, there seem to be a little bit more aligned with Mother Earth, Lady Libertas, social justice of Kali. Would you agree with her, or can you go there? Is that just too far afield?
Well, I would say, I don't know if you and the listeners are familiar with George Lakoff. He is a linguist and a wonderful writer about the whole political scene and about our kind of underlying metaphors that structure our understanding of politics. And he talks about these two overarching kind of frames through which we view the political world, one of which he calls the strict father frame, which tends to be held up by the Republicans and the right wings and those that are even further right than the Republicans, if such a thing is possible. Right? And that's kind of the patriarchal, you know, the world is tough and the government's like a family and it needs a strict father to keep people in line, and you've got to be have discipline in order to survive in a tough world, and if you get given too much, you're being coddled and it will make you weak, you know. We all know that one. And the other one is what he calls the nurturing parent frame, that, yes, the country's like a family and the job of a parent is to really nurture and empower their children and to protect them, but to also give them the means to express themselves and develop themselves. And that's the framework. I wouldn't say the Democrats always do a very good job of putting that framework forth, but to me, that's the framework the Goddess stands behind, is the idea that, yes, we have to nurture each other, we have to take care of one another, we are all in this together, we're not separate, and the more that we understand that, the more that we build our politics and our programs and our policies around that, then really the more of a fair and just and abundant and beautiful world we can have.
Well, I certainly agree with you there. One of our other listeners said that, you know, during the past presidential election, folks like Gloria Steinem came out and gave their opinion against, you know, Sarah Palin, even though so many women seem to be getting behind her. You know, that they feared that she may actually end up in government leadership in the future. Do you have any comments about that?
Well, just because somebody happens to have female genitalia doesn't mean that they actually stand for the values of nurturing and caring and helping the next generation. And unfortunately, I don't think Sarah Palin does a very good job of representing real power and real nurturing values. And, you know, there was a time in the women's movement when everything seemed very simple. Like, women were good, men were bad. Right? And it's not that simple. And if anyone doubts that, take a look at someone like Condoleezza Rice, you know, or Margaret Thatcher. Again, it's about the values that we hold. It's not about what's dangling between your legs or not. And
why do you think so many women jumped on her bandwagon?
I didn't know any that jumped on her bandwagon.
Well, maybe not in your immediate circles. My immediate circles, no, either. But you saw the crowd she drew, and she continues to draw. And I have to tell you, on, you know, E-lists, I mean, there were women defending her with their life, you know. And I just couldn't understand it, quite frankly. And I don't know whether you've given it any thought. I just wondered if you had any ideas about that. Was it just the relation,
you know,
they could relate to her because she was a soccer mom, or, you know, she was like one of them?
Yeah. You know, I think a lot of women are kind of conditioned to not necessarily look at what our best interests are or who's representing our best interests. And unfortunately, politics in this country is so much about image and so little about substance. You know, that there may have been women who sort of saw her and went, yeah, you know, she's folksy, she's cool, you know, she's got those cute glasses.
And right? She's got such a sexy wink, right?
But I have to say, to me, her appeal was not there, right?
Okay. Another writer writes in. She says she wants to thank you for all the consciousness raising you do for the sacred feminine. In her opinion, it's some of the most important work for our times. Her question is about engaging in conversation with fundamentalist Christians. She says, recently online there was a mother asking for advice on her son who's having trouble reading. She stated that she reads to him every night and is reading to him books, you know, Harry Potter books.
Mm-hmm.
And in this column, the folks said to her, well, I see you attend church. You might want to check with your church leadership about the spiritual aspects of young children reading Harry Potter and books like The Sorcerer's Stone. Yes, there's a fight between good and evil, yet the main idea is to use magic, which is not relying upon God's power. Harry Potter literally teaches children how to actively cast spells, and witchcraft is like rebellion to God, and after all, he is jealous. So to get to the actual question, it is, would you, Starhawk, engage in conversation with this woman, and if so, what would you say?
Well, I'll pretty much engage in conversation with just about anybody, you know, and I might say something like, I don't know. I will engage in conversation, but sometimes you sort of have to think that some conversations are just going to be kind of useless. mind. You know, if someone's coming from that perspective, you're probably not going to change their mind about something. You know, for me, I love the Harry Potter books. I think they're great for kids because they awaken imagination and they awaken a sense of fantasy, a sense of courage. You know, how do you face obstacles? They're books about friendship and how you bond together in friendship. And, you know, if you don't want your kids reading books like that, well, there's always the old Elsie Dinsmore books from the 1800s or something that's likely to be, I don't know, maybe we should encourage everyone to have all their little Christian children read the Elsie Dinsmore books, and we might get a lot more recruits as soon as they grow up and escape. But I think it's important. I mean, I actually just wrote a book for children called The Last Wild Witch. That's just out now. It's published by Mother Tongue, Inc., the wonderful women that published the Wee Moon Calendar. And mm-hmm. it's a little picture book for children. And the reason I wrote it actually many years ago was I just got mad that there were all these negative images of witches out there and very few things that were positive images of witches. So I think Harry Potter does a wonderful job of, you know, having a magical world, which kids love. And the characters are very rich in there because they are both positive and negative. You know, all the characters are very dimensional. Very few of them are all good. And as the books go on, even the characters that seem all wise and all good at a certain point, you start to see their underside and their shadow sides and their human sides as the books go on and as Harry grows and gets older and gets into that developmental stage where we all do see that our parents and those wonderful figures also have feet of clay. So I think that is a really brilliant service that she's done for kids.
Okay. Well, do you want to tell us a little bit more about your new book?
Yeah, it's called, like I said, The Last Wild Witch, and it's about a perfect world, a perfect town and a perfect world where there's a rule for everything and a right way and a wrong way to do everything, and nobody ever breaks the rules except once in a while because they're at the edge of the magic town is the last wild forest, and there lives the last wild witch, and she spends her time brewing her magic brews and singing her magic songs, and every now and then when the wind is in the right direction, some of that wildness gets inside everybody, and then the kids don't stand in straight lines, and they don't obey the rules, and they want to stay outside and not go sit inside and do their lessons. And so the parents and the adults decide that they need to do something, and they decide to go into the forest and chop it down and get rid of the wildness and get rid of the witch. And the children manage to find a way to stop them, not only to stop them, but to open them up to some of that wildness so that by the end, the last wild witch and the town kind of are reconciled, and the last wild witch now kind of comes into the town, and the wildness and the civilized kind of coexist in a whole new way. And that's really better for everybody.
So what would you say the age range is for, you know, what age group did you write this for?
Well, it's targeted for 6 to 9-year-olds, but it's also a book I think that can be read to much younger children, and I keep hearing from a lot of adults that they like it. So.
And did it just come out this year?
It just came out, yeah, in the last few months.
And you can get it on Amazon or any of the usual places, your local bookstore.
You can go to my website, which is starhawk.org, and get links to it, to an online bookstore. You can get it through Amazon, and there are some bookstores that are carrying it. You can ask your bookstore to carry it, and they can get it. They can also go to Mother Tongue Inc. and get all information on how to order it and get it.
And that way it supports these pagan organizations, too, rather than Amazon.
Yeah. I think Amazon has its place, but I use a friend who's has a small online book distribution company called 100 Fires, and that's where my website links. And you know, I would encourage people to buy books from your independent bookstore if you possibly can, because many of them are still struggling so hard to stay alive and stay in business.
Absolutely. Well, this sounds like a wonderful solstice gift to me. You know, folks out there, stop shopping. You have the perfect gift right here.
Well, it's a great gift to give to your pagan kids, and it's a great subversive gift to give to the children of your fundamentalist cousins.
I like that.
Probably
idea.
Woman who doesn't like Harry Potter won't like this book at all.
Well, I have some Catholic relatives in Louisiana who think I'm going to burn in hell, and I think it's a perfect Christmas gift to send to them. Well, Starhawk, one of our other listeners wrote in, Starhawk, are you familiar with the popular TV series True Blood? And what do you think about how they made the character of the witch turn out to be the evil one?
You know, I just heard about that actually from my friend Donna Reed, the filmmaker, who confessed to me that she likes to watch it, but I haven't actually seen it, so can't really say much about that. I am a secret fan of Buffy, however, and I love the fact that they have a witch, it's not a realistic show, but they have a witch who's actually a good witch and who's sort of part of the team of good in there. And they occasionally will bring in things, like at one point when Buffy got sucked into a demonic computer program, they had to bring in a techno-pagan to get her out.
Well, I have to admit, it is a really good show. My husband is a vampire buff, and it's probably one of the best vampire shows out there. But that is my only complaint, too. I have to admit with this listener that it's, you know, for making vampires and everything, you know, so positive. I mean, there's the evil ones and there's the good ones. They have really sort of done a number on the, quote, witch, and that's unfortunate. Well, Starhawk, of all your work, do you have a favorite book? Is one of your projects sort of your pet?
Well, that's kind of like asking someone if they have a favorite child, you know. But I would say probably The Fifth Sacred Thing would be the one that I would pick if I had to pick just one.
Well, from an author's point of view, was it harder for you, writing fiction when most of your work, most of your work isn't really fiction. It's more nonfiction, right?
Well, it's not so much that it's harder, but it's a very different process. And I think the reason I haven't written as much fiction is just because it takes a kind of concentration and space and lack of distraction to create that other world and enter into it that, unfortunately, I just really haven't had a lot of in years since writing The Fifth Sacred Thing and then Walking to Mercury. But,
okay. Yeah. Now, when we first talked about you being on the show, one of the topics we were going to discuss was what you called Earth, Spirit, and Action. Do you want to talk more about that?
Well, for me, earth-based spirituality has always been really linked and integrated with political action and environmental action. And I think right now we're in this moment of crisis around climate change, and we're gearing up for the next round of talks in Copenhagen in December. We're at a time where the world urgently needs to make major shifts in things, little things, like our economy, our technology, our energy systems, our transportation systems, our production systems, our food production systems. And we need to make those shifts right now. We don't have the luxury anymore of endless time, of putting things off, of delays and, you know, all the sort of obstructions that the Republicans and the corporations are trying to put against this urgent need to actually make this tremendous, tremendous shift. To me, that's a spiritual question. It's not just a physical question or a practical question. You know, it's a question of, are we capable of really understanding that there are things that go beyond our immediate profit and our immediate convenience, and that these basic life support systems that sustain the earth and sustain the planet have got to be respected and got to be sort of the centerpiece of what we do and the decisions that we make, not just a kind of little afterthought where we decide that, yeah, we'll take care of the earth if it doesn't, you know, inconvenience us too much. And to me, that's the great spiritual crisis of this age. It's one that I think pagans and goddess worshipers have a lot to say about and need to be active and involved and at the forefront of helping that shift to occur.
Do you have any particular direct? Well, I mean, obviously, the big umbrella picture is environmentalism. But are there any particular groups or any particular areas that you would say to pagans and goddess advocates? You know, if you don't have your own pet project or pet organization, this would be the one that you know is a good one to be volunteering or sending money or doing whatever you can do for?
One of the organizations I like a lot is called the Transition Town Movement. And it started in Britain and it's now come to North America as well. And it's centered around the idea of people organizing their home communities to make a plan for how we're going to move into an energy descent economy, how we're going to actually use the resources we have right now to create the resources that we need in order to make this shift. So people can look at that. They can look at some of the things that I do. I teach something called Earth Activist Trainings, which are permaculture design courses. Permaculture is a whole global movement of ecological design based on the understanding that human beings, we can actually learn to create systems that meet our needs and at the same time actually heal and regenerate the ecosystems around us if we start by observing nature, looking at nature, working in the way that nature works, and letting nature be our guide and our model. So looking for permaculture courses in your area, looking at what kinds of actions and demonstrations and things will be happening this December around the climate change conferences, looking at all, there's so many tremendous local initiatives going on and positive things going on right now, and figuring out where your heart is around all this and getting involved in helping to create this new world that we need to build. In a way, it's an exciting time.
Well, what do you think the problem is? Do you think our leaders just have, or are they not convinced, or are they just not saying how dire the circumstances are because they're in the pockets of corporations. What would you say to that?
I think the corporations have a huge influence. I think denial is always a big factor. But I also think in some ways, you know, we've all grown up with this kind of cultural story that tells us it's a story of progress. You know, it's a story that says, hey, we now have transcended nature. We now no longer have to worry about, you know, the things that our ancestors had to worry about. We no longer have to be bound by nature's constraints. And to really grasp climate change means that we have to counter that story. We have to understand that actually we are bound by nature's constraints just as much as our ancient ancestors were when they were, you know, running around with the mammoths in the caves. You know, it may not seem so much that way, but nature, we are nature. We cannot separate ourselves from the natural world. So I think it's that story, in a sense, that desire to get out from the material world and not have to deal with any limits on our desires or our consumption or our ability to exploit the world around us, that I think is what's holding us back from making the changes that we actually need to make.
Well, would it be going too far to say that that maybe even the greed that capitalism breeds, that greed and capitalism are holding us back as well?
Well, capitalism, in a sense, you know, it gives us this false promise. It says, hey, you can build an economic system on the idea that you can have an economy that's endlessly expanding in a finite world. And, of course, you can't. Right? Not if that expansion is about extraction and exploitation and using up resources. You know, in a finite world, there are limits to the resources we've got. There are limits to what we can take. There are limits to growth. And if we don't understand those limits, then and we overrun the carrying capacity of our world, we can't necessarily bounce back from that.
So would you say environmentalism is maybe the biggest challenge of that pagans face today? Or is it just one of the challenges? Because certainly having people understand who pagans really are, continues to be an issue. Do the challenges to pagans come from within their ranks, from outside their ranks? Is it mostly environmentalism, all of the above?
I'd say it's all of the above. I mean, certainly the environment is a huge challenge, let's just say. On every level right now to all of us. Just because somebody's a pagan doesn't necessarily mean that they're much of an environmentalist. In fact, they may, you know, unfortunately, I know plenty of pagans that, you know, right, are not necessarily all that conscious about turning off their lights or driving their cars or growing their food or whatever. You know, just like I'm sure we all know Christians that are not living up to the ideals in their religion, or Jews, or anybody else. So I'd say we face multiple challenges, but to me, the big overriding one is, what's going to happen to this beautiful earth that we love? Are we going to be able to preserve enough of the biodiversity and the the wonder and the beauty of this planet, that our children and our great-grandchildren will know something of a world similar to what we've known, or are we, you know, are we looking at a really horrific and grim future that's going to result in hundreds of millions of deaths, massive worldwide hunger and thirst and starvation, immense loss of biodiversity, all those things that we know are coming down with climate change. You know, that to me is the big question.
So it's really a human challenge. It's not even just a pagan challenge. It's
no,
much bigger than just...
Yeah.
A question came in from one of our listeners. She wants to know, how do you think Barack Obama's doing? Are you disappointed?
I would say in some ways I'm disappointed. I was very deeply disappointed that my friend Van Jones, who was one of his advisors around green jobs, that he didn't stand up and defend him when he was attacked by Glenn Beck in the right wing and basically let him be hounded out of office. In other ways, I feel like there's just, I think the virulence of the opposition is so strong that you kind of have to give him credit for hanging in there and attempting to do the things that he is attempting to do. And mostly I think we need to look at ourselves and say, hey, you know, there's that story about Roosevelt when he took office and the unions came in and said, well, this is what we want. And Roosevelt said, great, you know, that's what I want too. Now make me do it. You know, we need to be out there involved, out in the streets, protesting sometimes, you know, on the phones, calling your representatives, really active and engaged. We can't sit back and expect him to do it or anyone to do it. It's up to us to do it and to create the social movement and the pressure that's going to allow him to do the things that I think he genuinely wants to do.
Well, what's your take on why, I hope I'm using the right terms, but progressives or liberals, the left, why do we tend to be so much more passive than this virulent right that we, you know, that seems to just steamroll over the left?
You know, I think George Lakoff has some really good insights into that. He says the left, we have this false expectation that people are moved by debates about policy and by reason, and that reason is something dry and intellectual and divorced from emotion. And he gives a lot of data in his most recent book, The Political Mind, which I highly recommend. You know, he talks about how real reason is emotional. It's not just intellectual. In fact, you could read it from a feminist perspective and say, yeah, we've been saying that all along. You know, real reason and intuition and emotions and all those things are intertwined, and you can't completely separate them. And the right wing has been much better at recognizing that and appealing to the emotions. They understand that just the power of repetition. You take a message and you repeat it over and over and over again, and it sticks. It actually creates structures in the mind, you know, that become fixed. And it's not that we can't learn to do that. We can, but we, you know, we have to be willing to actually look at those questions of how do we think, how do we speak, how do we convey a message in a way that speaks to people at deeper than just an intellectual level. Hello?
Hello? Starhawk?
Yeah.
Hi, I really apologize for that. Every now and again, Blog Talk has some sort of a glitch, and it was just unfortunate that I got totally disconnected from the show, and it took me about 2 minutes to get reconnected.
Okay.
So I apologize for that. I hope our listeners are still with us. But where did we leave off? I was asking you about why the left seems so passive, and Ed, you probably already answered that question, I would imagine.
I answered it, but I don't know right at what point you cut out.
Well, you were still on the air. I just,
Just
unfortunately, they somehow dropped me and disconnected me. So.
Uh-huh. All right. Well, maybe we should go on to another question.
Okay. Okay, and I'll listen in and hear what your answer was later, because I am curious about that.
Okay.
Well, let's see. One of the other questions we have, do you see real change happening, considering the years you've been at this? Should we have hope that change is really afoot and the sacred feminine is coming, you know, is real, actually being rebirthed more into our world?
I think we should definitely have hope, and not just hope, but determination and will to say, yeah, it is being rebirthed, and we're going to make sure it does get rebirthed. That's up to us. It's not just something we have to be passive about. It's something that we can be engaged in, creating, involved in ourselves to make happen. And I think if we do that, you know, then we have tremendous hope. I also, you know, I have hope because I do have my own deep spiritual connection to the goddess. And I don't believe the goddess is stupid or suicidal, right? I believe she evolved human beings for a purpose, to be her healing hands and her loving heart. And we may be kind of growing into the job, but I also believe that as we make the decisions to turn our culture around, then we have tremendous allies in the natural world that we can draw on, that will be awakened, that will be available, that will help us with the work of healing. And some of them are as simple as soil bacteria or fungi, you know, or worms, the simplest, humblest things under our feet. But once we start to look and appreciate those things, they have tremendous powers to break down toxins, to build living, healthy soil, to sequester carbon out of the atmosphere. So I am very hopeful.
Now, I'm sure you are probably familiar with the Findhorn Institute.
Mm-hmm.
Is that part of what you're talking about as well, that
Earth? Well, I'm actually talking about something even much less esoteric, like than the divas and you know, the nature spirits that they work with. So I do believe we can work with them, but I'm talking about actual soil bacteria. There's nothing more magical than these ancient creatures, which were the first forms of life, which have tremendous abilities to affect the basic biochemistry of the planet. They created the atmosphere that we breathe. They figured out how to photosynthesize, how to take energy from sunlight and use it to break apart carbon dioxide and water and recombine them into food, sugars, starches, hydrocarbons, carbohydrates, I mean. And that, to me, is a tremendous miracle. You know, it's a miracle that you don't have to be some weird New Age woo-woo person to believe in. It's a miracle that science tells us and has, you know, explored. And, you know, those great potentials, there's so many people that are now doing exciting work. There's people like Dr. Elaine Ingham in Corvallis, Oregon, who brews up compost teas that restore the living, healthy biology to the soil. Or Paul Stamets, who's up in Washington, who's been doing amazing work with mushrooms and their ability to break down toxins. And there's organic gardeners and farmers who know, you know, the secrets of how you build living soil and how you restore dead soil to health. And all those things are aspects of, to me, are really aspects of the goddess.
Absolutely. Well, during the course of the work you've been doing over all of this time, were there any important turning points that stick out in your mind that maybe you can say, yeah, things are really getting better, or, you know, we're going to experience that paradigm shift?
Well, you know, I had a wonderful experience a couple of years ago. I was down in Big Sur taking a permaculture workshop, and I went outside, and there were birds flying around, giant birds that looked like great giant vultures, but they were not quite, you know, they were different somehow. And it turned out that they were the California condor, which went to the very brink of extinction. And was then, there was a breeding program. And I remember one of my very first, you know, points of awareness about ecology was hearing about the, you know, the attempts to save the condor 30 years ago. And now they have enough that they've been able to release a number of them back into the wild. And there they were, flying around Big Sur. And to me, that's just kind of an emblem of the fact that there is hope, that, you know, there is the potential sometimes to save some of the things that we thought were lost. And again, I do really believe that once we make the shift, then there are great powers of healing that exist in the world that are waiting and eager to work with us.
Okay. One of our listeners asks, do you put any stock into the 2012 hoopla, or do you think maybe that the end is really going to be the beginning of the sacred feminine?
Well, I'm kind of old enough that I've been through a number of these things.
Like Y2K, you know, turned out to be.
There's the Age of Aquarius. There was the Harmonic Convergence, or the Harmonica Virgins, as some people like to call it. There's Y2K, you know, there's 2012, you know, that I think it does represent the shifting of a cycle, but that doesn't mean that the world is going to end or that, you know, there's going to be some giant cataclysm that will necessarily see or know at the moment. There's a lot of shifts that happen much more subtly. And so I'm hopeful that we will make that shift into again, you know, we are faced with making so many shifts and changes right now on major levels of the way that we as a culture have existed and the life that we have lived. We've got to make that shift. And so hopefully some of that 2012 energy will help us to really do that.
Okay. So Starhawk, who would you say were your mentors?
Well, my mother was certainly one of my mentors. She was a psychotherapist, and she was an expert in loss and grief. My father died when I was just 5 years old and left her as a single mom to raise me and my younger brother. And she sort of raised me, you know, she would talk to me a lot about her clients and about her ideas, even when I was very young. And I think that, for me, was it was very kind of formative of how I see the world, that I kind of grew up from the beginning, you know, with this idea that people did things for mysterious emotional reasons that weren't always evident on the surface. And that if you didn't understand why somebody did something, you know, you might be able to delve deeper into their history or into their reservoirs of pain, and then you would understand maybe why they were behaving the way that they were behaving.
Mm-hmm. So your mother.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there were other wonderful women at the beginning of, especially around feminist spirituality, people like Merlin Stone or Z. Budapest. There were a lot of us, I think, we sort of mentored each other, kind of grew up together, because a lot of us didn't really have elders. You know, we were having to reinvent the tradition as we went along. You know, we just had our 30th anniversary spiral dance ritual, and a couple of my old friends, Bonnie Barnett, who was helped write some of the music for our ritual, she came up from L.A. My friend Susan Stern, who did the goddess invocation at the very first spiral dance. My friend Kevin Lutton, who macrame-made the goddess costumes. We all went out to tea, and it was wonderful to sort of think back on, you know, the coven that we had together many, many years ago, and how in some sense we kind of mentored each other. We would create a ritual, and then we'd go back and sort of talk about what worked and what didn't work and what we'd intended and why we thought it might have worked or not worked. And that was how we created a lot of what we do now.
Well, you were really trailblazing new ground. We have a caller. I'm going to see if I can get them on the air. Sometimes the callers are just listening. Sometimes they're not actually there to speak, so we'll give it a shot and see. Caller, you're in the area code of 631. I'm going to try to unmute you, and hopefully you'll be able to ask. Oh, they hung up.
Oh, well.
Well, we're coming to the end of the show, and I wanted to ask you what you're working on now and what would be one of the most important insights you'd like to leave our listeners with.
Well, I am working on, like I said, the Earth Activist Trainings, which are permaculture courses that combine a grounding in earth-based spirituality with a full training, a full permaculture design certificate course, and also a focus on organizing and activism. We have one that's coming up in January in Northern California, and we'll probably have a couple of others this summer. And people can get information on those on my website, which is starhawk.org, or by going to earthactivisttraining.org. That's one of my main focuses, and another one of the focuses that's coming up, of course, is Copenhagen and activism around what's going to happen with climate change. I'm always writing. I write a lot of different kinds of things. I have a blog of my own that I write, which is, you can find it at starhawksblog.org. It's called Dirt Worship.
Okay, that sounds appropriate for the work you're in.
And I also write for a Washington Post Newsweek blog on religion called On Faith.
Okay. Well, our caller seems to be trying to get back in. Let's try one more time and see. Caller from the 631 area code, I'm going to try to connect you with us, so don't hang up. Okay, let's see if this works. Are you there, caller? Can you
Yes,
hear
I am.
Did you have a question for Starhawk?
Yes, I do, actually. And it's great to be on the phone with you guys. Thank you very much for having me. My question is about how to create awareness in a suburban middle-class community where people are just completely out of touch with everything that you guys are talking about, which seems so familiar to me. And it just seems like such a small pod of people who have a sense of awareness.
I think the Transition Towns folks have some good ideas of how to begin. Rob Hopkins, who founded the movement, has a book called The Transition Handbook, and he talks about starting events in your neighborhood that are things maybe like movie night, potlucks, you know, just ways to get people involved. There's a lot of wonderful resources around as far as movies and videos to show people, including one called The End of Suburbia, about peak oil. Right? You know, so that can be a way in. You know, oftentimes people are willing to do something that seems social and like a party, where they might not be willing to come to something that's, let's come to a political meeting, or how would you like to do a pagan ritual? Thinking about what are the issues and the things in your area and how can you connect around them to meet the different kinds of needs or the concerns that people have. Organizing around emergency preparation and response, for example, you know. San Francisco, we've got earthquakes. Other places, you've got fires. Getting people together and saying, well, hey, you know, let's get our neighborhood prepared in case there is an earthquake. Let's not wait for it to happen. And that can often be a way to get into talking about things like, well, where are we going to get our food if the current system goes down? Or how are we going to take care of one another if something happens and we don't have access to the usual resources that we have access to? And, you know, maybe we'd also like to celebrate some of the stuff that's going on in our neighborhood. There's a wonderful group in Portland, Oregon called City Repair, and they actually organize neighborhoods to create gathering places out of intersections and do public art projects, get people involved in community gardening. You know, there's a lot of different ways, I think, that we can kind of meet people where they are. You know, there are common things that everybody needs, like food. Rather than expecting people to kind of come and meet us where we think they ought to be.
Right. No, those are wonderful ideas. And, you know, you talked about coming to my pagan ritual. Like, I actually do things like that. I teach Sunday school at a Unitarian Universalist congregation. And so I have the opportunity to do pagan rituals with kids, which
That's
is
great.
Wonderful. Yeah, it's wonderful. And I'm also a school teacher in a public school, and I do environmental units. I do things. I teach the Gaia hypothesis to kids and try to
Great.
Get them It's all wonderful, but the moment, you know, somebody, I'll say something, and one of my neighbors will say to me, you know, you're starting to sound like a pagan. And I say, uh-huh. Well, I am a pagan. And they are terrified automatically. Uh-huh. And it's bizarre to me. I'm like, how could you, you know, knowing where I come from, knowing how I think and knowing who I am, you know, how could a word be so alienating and how could a word make you seem so subversive? It's bizarre to me.
I want to recommend to you George Lakoff's book, The Political Mind.
I have it written down already.
Yeah, because he actually talks about that. And I, you know, when I read that book, I understood, you know, he talks about how things get linked in the mind and they actually make like neural patterns in the mind. So you get a set of ideas like pagan, evil, whatever. And it's like a pathway that's there that's already constructed. And the only way to take it apart is to actually make it visible and then to create some alternative linkage and pathway and reinforce it by repeating it over and over again. And when I read that, I kind of went, all right, that was sort of intuitively why we decided to call ourselves witches way back when, rather than use a nicer word, you know, because we said, you know, that word witch, when, you know, if we don't examine it, if we don't go through that process with it, then it's like a stick to beat you with.
I know.
You know, it's this association of women with evil and women's power with evil. That's also an association of danger with any form of knowledge that's not approved of by the authorities. There's just a million linkages in there. And if we do go through that process of kind of taking them apart and looking at them and creating new and different linkages, then it's a way of addressing all of those assumptions and on a very deep level. So it's work. And I think one of the things to remember is that these kinds of changes don't happen instantly or immediately. They take time and they take repetition. Even changes, you know, like, you know, I often hear people say, you know, oh, so-and-so, you know, I don't want to work with her. I don't like her. And you say, well, have you given her this feedback? Have you told her what she's doing that you don't like? They'll say, oh, I gave her feedback and she didn't listen. You know, she still hasn't changed. She's still doing the same things. Well, giving people feedback once, they're probably not going to change. I mean, do you change? You know, you decide you want to stop smoking or something, and you say, all right, I'm not going to smoke. How many times do you immediately make that change? You usually don't. It takes a long time and a lot of repetition and falling back and forth before you really get those new patterns set. And the same is true, I think, on political changes and changes about those ideas and assumptions around words, that it takes a lot of repetition. You know, people might respond the first time with shock, the second time with a little less shock, the third or fourth or fifth or tenth time they'll have gotten used to it, and by the 20th time they might have kind of realized they're a pagan, and by the 25th time they'll thought they always were a pagan.
Right.
Well, caller, thank you. Thank you so very much for calling in. We certainly appreciate your interest and your taking the time to be with us tonight.
Thank you both very much.
You're welcome.
Have a great night.
So, Starhawk, anything we haven't covered that you want to make sure we say to our listeners before we have to say goodnight?
Well, I just think this is a tremendously exciting moment to be alive. And I want to encourage all our callers and listeners, you know, to find a way to establish your own relationship and your own connection with nature, to give yourself some time each day to be in nature, even if that nature is just like your backyard. you know, or an empty lot somewhere, but to walk, to watch and learn and observe and connect with the natural world, because that is what feeds us as well as what we're most called to protect. And as we do that, then I think we develop the understandings and learn the language that we need to communicate back to nature and to draw on that help and those allies that are there waiting for us to do that healing work.
Okay. Well, Starhawk, it's been a delight. Thank you for being patient with this gamut of questions. We certainly, you know, went from one extreme to the other with our questions, but I think it's been really insightful and informative, and I think maybe helps people have a better barometer check for what goddess ideals are, what it means to be a pagan, what it means to be a political pagan. So thank you so very much for your time and for taking part in the series. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
Well, you're welcome to stay online if you like and listen to the rest of the show. We're going to have some announcements toward the end, or if you have other things you have to do, you're welcome to just hang up. It's up to you. But thank you so much for being on the show.
Well, thanks. I am going to have to go, but I've enjoyed it very much, and thank you for doing this.
Oh, well, thank you so much, too, and good night, and I look forward to having you on sometime again.
Okay. Bye.
Well, if you're just tuning in, this is Karen Tate, hostess of Voices of the Sacred Feminine, where we discuss goddess, the divine feminine, and the resurging interest in right brain thinking and the feminine consciousness, whether the great she be deity, archetype, or ideal, and how these new values and benchmarks just might save the world. We're going to take a short music break for about a minute and let you listen to Jenna Green and her song Dance With Me. But please stay tuned, because when we come back, there are some announcements, the things that are happening all across the country that you will probably want to know about. So here's Jenna Green and Dance With Me.
You'd had enough, such worry on your face, I could tell. Did ask to drink and to stop you from thinking about your day of living hell. Well, the best that's to play and the fiddler is playing, the bar on hand out of dead. How I think it would do you some good to take my hand and move your feet. Stop counting your sorrows and dreading tomorrow, let your heart be wild and free. Life is for living and love is forgiven, so get on the floor and
well, I'm back, and I have some announcements for you. First, I want to tell you about the American Academy of Religion, the 100th anniversary. There's going to be a sizable contingent of Cherry Hill Seminary faculty, staff, board members, and friends that are going to converge on Montreal this weekend for the annual meeting of the American Academy of Religion. Many pagans connected with Cherry Hill Seminary have presented for the American Academy of Religion over the years, and send good energy to them. They're going to be taking part in the Contemporary Pagan Studies group. And if you are attending the AAR meeting or would like to connect with other pagans attending, please email Cherry Hill Seminary. Also, coming up in Southern California, the Queen of Your Realm series of convocations with Ava Park. She's the foundress of the Goddess Temple of Orange County, begin November 7th with subsequent dates in February, April, May, and September. You can take the series as one event or sign up for the entire series. The focus of the Queen of Your Realm series is about ruling your life in peace, power, and prosperity, to save not just yourself and your family, but, oh yes, the world. And this upcoming convocation on Saturday, November 7th from 6:30 to 10 o'clock is titled Nature, Powers, and Water. And as I said, it's the first in a series of several that are going to happen over the next few months. And the description says, come to your convocation covering your essential nature, what you hold, commanding your realm in love and power, relating to aspects of mother, maiden, crone, and queen, and the body of the queen, the sacred chalice, dismissing demonization of the queen and the great powers within you, being a river to your realm, integration of all dualities, and using your element of water, the good queen and the bad queen, and receiving tribute. So each event is $65, or the series is $275. You can get more information at this email address I'm about to give you. It's info@goddesstempleoforangecounty.com. Also, too, coming up is at the Goddess Temple is the series put together by the UU Church quite some time ago, but a beloved and well-known and well-respected series called Cakes for the Queen of Heaven. It's a seminar series in feminist theology. $25 a class. There's 11 classes. They start in January, and they're going to run every other week until July. I am actually going to be teaching those classes for the temple. They've asked me to do that for them, and I am gladly complying because I think it's very important for women to understand herstory. Those classes are $25 each. You don't have to take every class, but you can, and we are taking pre-registrations now. It might not be a bad idea to consider the Cakes for the Queen of Heaven series or the Queen of Your Realm series with Ava as a holiday gift to yourself because, you know, you're worth it. And if you've been meaning to tune in to my other radio show on CBS, Earth Sacred Places, don't delay. CBS is no longer providing that airtime they were giving me free, and I've opted not to to pay for the airtime myself to continue to have the show. So don't miss the wonderful guests talking about sacred places of goddess around the world that I've interviewed, as we talked about India, Nepal, Britain, France, all sorts of places. There's over a dozen shows there. For a short period of time. I'm not sure how much longer they're going to keep those up in the archives, but if you've meant to go and listen and haven't yet, don't delay. Go to psychiconair.com, look up my name as a host in the archives, and download those shows and listen before they're gone. Well, I guess I've been motivated to take my cue from Starhawk's activism. You'll find articles that I've written for theexaminer.com as the LA Women's and Goddess Spirituality Examiner. It's really about the politics of spirituality. Sometimes we don't like to think of spirituality and politics being linked, but they are. And I have some articles there about healthcare for all, sexism, and how platforms that put profits before people are not really goddess ideals. I'll also be giving a talk on November 15th at the Sophia Temple, otherwise called Olindar, at the home of Carla and Lee McCloskey on the topic of the sacred feminine for a sustainable future. That's going to be in Malibu if you're in the Southern California area on November 15th. Also, if you check out my website, you'll find out that there are free downloadable meditations there for your enjoyment. While you're there, get to know me better. Check out my two books. The first is Sacred Places of Goddess, 108 Destination, which has garnered prestigious endorsements. And my second book, Walking an Ancient Path, won a place as a finalist in the USA National Best Books of 2008 Awards. The scholar David Hillman, who wrote The Chemical Muse, remarked that the book, Walking an Ancient Path, is not only pleasurable and enlightening, but it stands boldly against the patriarchal denigration of the divine feminine. And I'm very proud of that. Check out my events page, see if I'm appearing in a town near you, see what talks I have available to give your group. Look at my articles and links to people around the world making a difference. And take advantage of the offer I have on my website in the Goddess Store. Both of my books are $25 plus shipping and handling. Before I close the show tonight, I would like to leave you with a prayer from the Goddess Temple. They put these out every month, and this is the one for this month. Grandmother Spider, we honor you within us as every day with your help we weave our sacred web of life. All honor and gratitude to you, Grandmother. Well, if you like what you've been listening to on Voices of the Sacred Feminine, please tell your friends to tune in, and please add us as one of your Blog Talk favorites. Even consider signing up as a listener and have reminders of upcoming shows sent directly to your email box. Now, the last part of the show, I usually like to highlight a musical artist, and tonight that is going to be Flash Silvermoon and her song Persephone Rising. Good night, listeners. Enjoy Flash Silvermoon's music, and I hope you will tune in again next Wednesday night.
Yeah.